Om Sahana, Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navaditamastu, Ma Vidveshovahai, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. May Brahman protect us. May Brahman sustain us, and may Brahman illumine our thinking consciousness. May we not find fault with each other, with the world, or with the teachings. And may what we study be a source of inspiration to us eternally. Om peace, peace, peace. And may peace be unto us, and may peace be unto all. Om Hari Om. It's Sunday. This is our last class on Viveka Chudamani and this particular visit of mine. Although next weekend we have a class on Ramakrishna, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's descent in Saturday and Sunday formats. On his birthday, and also Friday night a concert in honor of his birthday and honor of SRV's new book, Swami Vivekananda Vijnana Gita, the orange one there. It's the yellow one, but Sri Sharada Vijnana Gita, which was her song. We put her feet on the cover. And then Swami Vivekananda Vijnana Gita. Vijnana Gita means a wisdom song. He put his hand, because someone in the early days had photographed his hand. So those two Vijnana Gitas are there, which are a synopsis of teachings of those two great souls whose footfalls grace this earth in our very time. So we don't have to rely on 2,000-year-old teachings from Christ or 2,500-year-old teachings from Buddha or even the 5 or 10,000-year-old teachings from the ancient rishis. We have in this day and time an exemplar of the highest kind and called Avatara Vaishtaya. I was just chanting to them, Om Shtapakaya Chattarmasya, that one who is steady in the Dharma of all religions, Sarvadharma Swarupine, who is the essence of all Dharmas in this time, Avatara Varishtaya, who represents the best of all divine descents, Ramakrishnaya Te Namaha. We offer him our salutations. So Friday night we'll have a concert for that, Jaima Music, a rare Jaima Music event. We used to tour all over giving concerts everywhere we possibly could. Aloke Ma, myself, and Lex Hickson. There's an old picture of us at, I think that's probably at Integral Yoga back in Virginia. That was taken. I look young. Lex has his white hair. He was about 10 years my senior. But we used to tour all over and give all sorts of concerts. But we're going to give one of those on Friday at Opening to Life, a place which counsels people in a holistic way, working with their minds. And we know that the mind is the source of liberation. It's the source of bondage. It's the gateway to hell, and it's the doorway to heaven. It all depends on how you use it. If you purify it, of course, it becomes a marvelous mechanism. But left untended, then it tends to bring out its negative. Today, Shankara in the Viveka Chudamani talks about that. He talks about brooding mind, chitta-chinta. How to turn it into thinking mind, chitta-lochana. And then how to turn it into illumined mind, chittabhati. Bhati means the light of consciousness. When your mind can pick up the light of consciousness itself and live in a non-dual state above these dualities we were just chanting. We recognize that one is the only witness to the changing phenomenon of this universe. That is, it's beyond good and bad, virtue and vice, pleasure and pain. The birth of your baby and the death of your grandfather. The death of 400,000 souls in a tidal wave. Or the birth of 5,000 souls every couple minutes. Beyond all that is Brahman, and you're forgetting to pay homage. In fact, negligence of Brahman is what Shankara talks about in these next slokas, the dangers of the negligence of Brahman. That is, you have karmas, that's why you've come here. You've come here to neutralize your karmas or to live out the Prarabdha karma of this particular life. In order to do that, you're going to have to do some purificatory exercises to keep kriyamani karma or distracting karma from entering in and ruining the purpose of your life. You see, you come here for a certain purpose, And then as you're trying to work it out, all these distractions come. We studied 9 of them yesterday, right? Can you remember them? 2 were physical, 4 were mental, 1 was intellectual, and 2 were spiritual. According to the father of yoga, a gift. What are the 9 obstacles of your mind? So we studied those, and we studied the 4 distractions too. The 4 distractions to keeping your mind settled are this, shifting a body. You see, not being able to keep one position. Forget this hatha yoga stuff. You just get into ekasana, Shankara says. One position. Of course, you may have to assume a few different positions to begin with, but then settle. Be at peace. Anga me jayatva. The angas, the limbs, all become settled. They find their place. Nothing angular, nothing restless, you see. And then watch your breath. Puraka in, kumbhaka hold, rechaka out. And don't forget to hold on the out-breath too. There's 2 kumbhakas. Kumbhaka means your mind is suddenly placed in a state of awareness, isn't it? When you watch your breath all of a sudden, and all of a sudden you forget everything else and you breathe. And you stop breathing. And it's a moment of silence. And then you breathe in again. Birth, it's life. It's old age and it's death. You see, and your breath is in cycles just like everything else in the universe. So beyond these cycles is Brahman. And we want to get to that Brahman and posit ourselves in that Brahman because I and my Father are one. Or as we said it earlier than Christ, thou art that, or that thou art. Tattvamasi. Or if you want to get right down to the business of it, aham brahmasmi, this ego, aham kara, is really the supreme self. You just have to strip away the surface layers. And you may have to strip away some subtle layers too, because you have 3 bodies. You have not just a physical body, you have a subtle body, and you have a causal body. Your causal body, you find that when you're in deep sleep. But do you know it? Can you go into deep sleep consciously? Most people can't, so you practice meditation. You go into the same state when you meditate if you cut time down and calm your mind. See? Calm your mind. Get a hold of the life breath through breathing exercises, or better, through japa. If you get a mantra from a teacher, it's a better way. And then calm your mind. And as you calm your mind, don't fall asleep. And make sure you X out the quotient of restlessness. Those are the first 2 impediments to a good meditation. Sleepiness, restlessness. And then after that, you'll start to feel a little bliss. And that's also an impediment. And don't just stop there. And you'll also go into blank, a kind of emptiness, periods of blankness. And you must keep your awareness. You must keep your awareness to bear on everyday life and in your meditations. Use gyanajana, knowledge in meditation. Don't just go blank and think, if I make my mind blank, then that's going to be it. See, there's a consciousness behind you that's not empty, it's full, from which all of this has come. It's anterior to life and mind, as we've been reading in the Mundaka Upanishad, which we study Wednesday nights, and we'll be studying this coming Wednesday night. Anterior to life and mind is this Atman. Anterior, in case anyone doesn't know, means before. And this before infers no beginning. 2 beginnings, middles, and ends belong to prakriti, maya, nature, cyclic things. But your soul never experiences those. So your soul is the witness of all of those states. Sakshi bhutam, the witness of all bhutas. Sakshi means witness, and bhuta means objects, worlds, people, beings, things that come and go constantly. A march of phenomena before the 5 senses. The pictorial presentation of maya, dancing before the 5 senses and the mind, as the tantrists call it. So you stand back, detach from that, witness it. You reunite yourself with your seer. Forget your inner child. How about your seer, your original seer? Unite yourself with that, because childishness doesn't get you anywhere. Childlikeness was the beginning. See, Christ was childlike. Ramakrishna was childlike. He used to say, a child is never caught by the gunas, see, the gunas of maya. That is, things that bring about egotism that Shankara is talking about in our scripture. He has a set of slokas about the ego. So the gunas solidify around an individualized soul, an ahamkara, a jiva. Yeah, but they don't know jivatman. See, there's an atman within there. And if you concentrate on that atman, it tends to come forward. It tends to recede when you lose awareness of it. Just like in deep sleep, you lose awareness of your consciousness. But you're still the knower in deep sleep. You know everything. He actually explains that coming up here in a couple slokas. Just like you move amongst these things, but you forget them, right? You're the knower here in this waking state, but you choose not to know. Same in deep sleep. You're the knower there, but you choose not to know what's there. What's there in deep sleep is infinite potential of the cosmic mind. Om, Prakriti, Pradhana, it is unmanifested Prakriti. Lord Brahma, you call it different things, anthropomorphically or more formlessly speaking. But basically, all knowledge is there within you. Prior to that, the King of Heaven is within you. It means all knowledge is there within you. And at first, when you have your first samadhi about that, as Patanjali says, you begin to become aware that there's this huge mass of knowledge all around you and within you. And that's the first sort of overwhelming samadhi. But a master goes another step and realizes that he can do a samyama on each one of those bits of knowledge. He can focus in on them and extract the essence of them. You might say a bee is flying around, big black bee, humming, om. See, full of consciousness, and all of a sudden looks down and there's a huge field of flowers as far as it can see. And now it's overwhelmed, right? It can't see each particular flower. It's just a wash of flowers. It's in a sort of ecstasy of all the potential there. Now it starts to come closer to the field and it sees the individual flowers and it begins to pick the choicest ones. And it gets inside, Sri Ramakrishna says, it gets inside, goes deep inside the flower and just sits there and hums and joyfully, you see. Like in a deep meditation, the soul goes into a deep meditation and begins to extract the pollen. So that's a deeper kind of samadhi, when you can focus in on what's there. You become able to concentrate, like Lord Vasishtha was telling us in one of those quotes yesterday. It's like a very, very long period of intense concentration, only without any conceptualization going on. Because when the mind starts to conceptualize about things, then it's caught in the realm of name and form and fantasy. Sankalpa vikalpa, Krishna calls it in the Gita. It's an evil, but it keeps you away from the highest good, keeps you in cycles. And as long as you're distracted like that, then you don't know your true self, which is birthless, which is deathless, which is beyond cycles, which is eternal, which is indivisible, which is ever free, which is never bound. That self, the one they talk about in the scriptures, the one that's inferred by everything that you see around you, that mind, everything that it sees, everything it infers is really mother intelligence or mother wisdom, see. But it's looking at it as objects, solid matter. And it's not seeing it as Brahman or as Chit-Shakti, as intelligence. So learning to focus your consciousness and bring it to bear in the waking state, in the dreaming state, in the deep sleep state, and in that state called Turiya, the fourth state, even in the state called Turiya-Titta, beyond the fourth state. They even added states beyond that. Seven steps of knowledge, of inner knowledge. And the second one is all knowledge lies within you. So if you begin to access all that knowledge, then it's the way to become a free soul, back to your origin, back to your true self. And you'll never fall victim to Maya's enchantments again. Your ignorance will die. Your sleep will be put to sleep. You'll make fear afraid of itself. You'll put death in its own grave, as my teacher used to say. So it's the most noble pursuit of an embodied being. It's the purpose of life. There's no other purpose other than that. Because if you do anything, think anything, or any deed or any act or any thought, if you do it from the standpoint of realization of your Atman, it accrues no karma. There's no cause and effect in it. Just like when you're in deep sleep, you're not accruing any karma. You're just laying there, doing nothing, thinking nothing, knowing nothing. No karma accrues there. There's no effect there, but there's still a cause, isn't there? A cause that wakes you up, see, out of deep sleep. You come out of this deep meditation, which you so loved, and all of a sudden you're back in the world of dualities. Sometimes pulled against your will, you see, because you're in a worried state, or you're unhappy, or you're in grief, various things. Back to the world of the six passions. Back to the world of the eight fetters. Back to the world of the four deadly traps. Back to the world of the three gunas. Back to the world of the ego, the false ego. But yet, all, there amidst it all is this one self looking on, see, that you're forgetting as you go into sleep, as you wake up. Sometimes you wake up out of deep sleep, you don't know where you are or who you are, and you hear the om, quick, it disappears as you come back in. So you were a great big black bee amongst a field of flowers, you see, and you woke up, and then now you're back here with these sense flowers, you see. Renounce, O mind, the sense flowers of this earth. Drink instead the nectar of mother's lotus feet. Enjoy thus, in peace and in mirth. Then in charm of delusion shalt thou cease to be. O great mother of the world, be our salutations ever unto thee. Swami Abhedananda said that very nicely so. Renounce the sense flowers of this earth, that is, give up sense objects and your attachment to them, and drink instead the nectar of mother's lotus feet, that is, her wisdom that caused the object to appear, that is, at the very foundation of the object. It's not vibrating particles of atoms, it's vibrating particles of Atman. Not atomic particles, atmic particles. That's the real key to it. It's intelligence itself vibrating there, but your senses are toning it down to a solid object, and consciousness is sleeping in stones, and it's dreaming in plants, and it's half awake in animals, and it's fully awake in the human being, and it's illumined and even beyond itself in the case of an illumined soul who's controlled the mind. Controlled the mind so much that can take on a body and give it up without ever being born and without ever dying. Dalai Lama's done it 14 times and taken on a huge burden in the process, but still remains in awareness of his Buddha nature. Is he a politician? Is he a world figure? Ask what he wants to do. I'd just like to retire into the mountains and meditate. That's all he really wants to do. Because he's found that peace which passes all understanding, it's called Buddha nature. He's found that, and that's where he wants to be all the time. That's where he is all the time. And he has no karma of his own, but he has to deal with the karma of one country, now two countries. First Tibet, now China and Tibet, now America, China and Tibet. Collective karma. The karma of many individuals. Like an avatar, like Sri Ramakrishna. See, he got the cancer in his throat because of that principle of taking on the karma of so many hundreds of beings. So all of these things, these deep divine mysteries and spiritual life, are explained by the scriptures, and they're explained by the guru. These are the two things. Guru Anushasana, you must have an illumined soul as your teacher. And then Vidya Shastra, he'll explain to you the essence of the scriptures, which is what we've been studying here for a decade and a half. In Portland, in San Francisco, in Hawaii, and on the East Coast. We've been going through these great scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, Adhyatma Ramayana, and the Upanishads, Viveka Chudamani, Drigdrishya Viveka, Ashtravakra Samhita, Avadhuta Gita, Gaudapada's Karika. We'll be doing some of this in Seattle, weekend after next, at our retreat, 5 days. As Sri Ramakrishna said, the people of this day and age must especially the householders with families and so forth, must go into retreat, away from children, away from everything. Do it at least once a year so that they can recall their true self. They can get back in touch with their true self. And really, we find that if you go into retreat and come out and go in and come out, like a whale diving and breaching, pretty soon you're able to render the internal world and the external world into one thing. By enough practice, going into retreat and coming out and dealing with the world with what you learned in retreat and going in again and coming out, you can yourself become the seer. Drishya. Om drishyam pratitam pravilapayan san san matram anantaganam vivavayam samahita san bahir antaram va bahir, the outer antaram, the inner. You're able to take the outer world and the inner world and reduce them into one thing. Then meditate on that one thing. See, there's the bee on one flower again. And by meditating on that one thing now, just pass your time contentedly and be free. You've done it. You've taken the world of variances. You've taken the ego with all its various moods and so forth. You've ripened it. And you've made all the worlds and all the lokas into one amorphous mass of pure conscious awareness, indeterminate mass of pure conscious awareness. And now you can meditate on its facets, like a jeweler would look at a huge diamond, see, with in various views and magnifications. And that's wisdom. That's true wisdom. Dive deep into the ocean of God's beauty. There you will find your beloved. Go seek the Vrindavan in your heart, where Krishna and his devotees sport eternally. Light up, wisdom's shining lamp. So that Chit-Shakti, that mother of intelligence, is you. O mother, what do you see in your own meditations? I know what I see in mine. But O mother, what do you see in your meditations? O meditator, become the goddess. She is your essence. I and my Father are one. That thou art. That's contentment. That's bliss. That's the peace which passes all understanding. And in that state, Shankara wrote these great scriptures, like Viveka Chudamani. The Chudamani, they call it, the crest jewel. It's probably the most comprehensive and lucid of all of his great scriptures, and I've studied most all of them, and I find them all great. The last set of slokas yesterday, Saturday morning, we studied the four states of consciousness that he had brought up. Jagrat, Svapna, and Sushupti, was it? Jagrat, the waking state. Svapna, your dreaming state. And Sushupti, your deep sleep state. And so I dreamt last night. And then this morning in meditation, I traced my dream. Where did it come from? How much of it can I remember? Where did it go? Because it's not what you dream that's important. Say, oh, let's go to a dream worker, a dream analysis, and oh, this means this and that. It all means nothing. It's Maya, which you think. That there's some significance or some rhyme and reason to Maya? There's not. There's no meaning in Maya whatsoever. Meaning is in yourself, in your Atman. So it doesn't mean you should seek what your dreams mean. It's where your dreams came from. It's one of the ways of awakening your consciousness. There are 8 ways of awakening your consciousness. One of them is to trace your dreams back to their source. And so piece by piece you trace them. You see, like breadcrumbs through a forest. Trace them back to where the dream first started. You'll either find yourself at the waking state where you first entered sleep, or you'll find yourself at the other tail end where you left dream state and went into deep sleep. You left Svapna state and you went into Sushupti. And if you can consciously go into Sushupti, then you'll see the light of Mother Wisdom. You'll hear it or you'll see it. Depending on your temperament, hearing and seeing is the same there. That is, some who are more visionary, who are more actuated to using the eyes or the visions, will see light, and some will hear Om. But whatever the case, you'll enter into that state of the primal vibration, where all of this vibration, dense, gross, heavy, preponderant, has become returned to the source. You've effectively when you went into deep sleep, returned it all to source. Salutations to you. See? Salutations to myself, which outlives even the destruction of the universe. And is even beyond time. See? Beyond time, space, and causality. So that's one of the slokas in the great scripture. Salutations to myself, who outlives even the destruction of the universe. So you trace it back into deep sleep, go into deep sleep, and you see that that's all unmanifested property. There's an infinite wash of pure conscious awareness there, shining with its own light. Svayam Jyoti, it's not shining by any other light. Not the light of the sun, not the light of the moon, not the light of lightning, not the light of stars, not the light of fire, not the light of this life force, which caused you to move about and think. Not that light either. It shines by its own light. It's self-effulgent. Svayam Jyoti. And in that light, you will find your essence. That is you, that light. When you say, I and my Father are one, you've transcended deep sleep or the cosmic mind, and you've gone beyond Lord Brahma and beyond Indra, the god of the gods. So salutations to Brahma, salutations to Indra, salutations to Pushpa, salutations to Surya, the sun, salutations to all the worlds and all the deities in all the worlds. Let me pass. I no longer desire to revolve in the worlds of becoming. I am pure being. Namrityurna shanka name jati beta. See, I have no birth, I have no death, I have no parents, no father, not even a mother have I. I am Shiva, I am Shiva, I am pure conscious awareness, I am steady, I am stable, I am unchanging. What else would I be? If I identify with the changing, then I get tossed about. But if I identify with the depths, I am always in peace. The depths of pure conscious awareness are free of the waves of relativity, free of the vibrations of matter. So it makes sense that we would want to identify there. Disidentify from the unreal, identify with the real. Because Brahman Satya, Brahman is real, truthful, true. But Jagat, the world, is mitya, false, changing, ephemeral, transitory, unreliable, mutable. Look up how many different words you can find for changing. But they had one word for unchanging, and that was called aparinami. They said, even amidst all the transformations of relativity, my soul remains the same. So I follow the path of ajati, no birth, no death. Krishna's there on the battlefield with Arjuna. Arjuna has to fight his relatives in another army, you see, in the opposite side of the war. And Krishna says, don't worry when you meet your relatives on the battlefield. As is your warrior caste, your warrior creed, you will destroy them. But you will not be destroying anything, because they are not a form. They are the Atman, ever free. There never was a time that they died. Never will come a time when they will die. You're thinking of them as a form. All forms are mutable. Think of them as the formless Atman, which cannot be destroyed. Arrows cannot pierce it. Sword cannot cut it. Water cannot drown it. Fire cannot burn it. It's that one indestructible self, which allowed Gandhi to do what he did, which allowed Dalai Lama to do what he's doing. It's that one indivisible self, whether you call it Atman or whether you call it Buddha nature, Tathagatagarbha, or the indivisible self, or the Almighty Father, whatever you want to call it, it's that one indestructible principle which you are. And the Advaitists and Undualists are never tiring of telling you this because it hasn't been heard enough. It should have been heard from step one, as soon as you were able to understand, walk on two legs and understand words, then you should have heard that word, non-dualism or Advaita. And it should have been passed to you as it was to the children in the Satya Yuga, this age of light, so that when they grew up, they had no fear. So you see the kids wearing these t-shirts nowadays, no fear, no fear. And I ask them, what do you mean by that? I say, well, I can take a skateboard and I can, you know, do this and that. I can jump it on top of a handrail and come down and not even fear of falling. I said, well, that's pretty courageous, but I have a deeper sense of courageousness and boldness I can tell you about. As Vivekananda said, I know how to squeeze more juice out of my orange. He was pretty orange, as you can tell. He told that to Nikola Tesla and other great beings of our Western culture early on in some of the religious community. I know how to squeeze more juice out of my orange. It means I've renounced the world, so I'm not taking any wooden nickels, thank you. I have no false gods before me. I have the one reality. Yes,
did you really say that to a skateboarder?
Uh-huh.
And what did he respond?
That's radical, man. Dude, you know. It's radical. So this preamble, which I've launched into here at the beginning of this class on Sunday, has been to sort of remind us of our divine heritage. You hear that term sometimes, but really in the sense of non-duality, that I and my Father are one, or as Shankar is about to tell us, get rid of that sense of separation posited by the ego, that I'm a separate ego from, I'm different from others, and I'm different from God, you see. I'm separate from God. Get rid of that sense of separation. It's one of the subtlest things that you'll renounce. And it stands to reason, because when you go into meditation, the last thing you'll see is that sheath or that kosha of ego disappear. And that will be a difficult moment for you, or a blissful moment, depending on what state your mind's in. The one thing the meditators don't realize is that from the lowest blade of grass up to the highest avataric descent, the three gunas of nature are still going on. So when you're trying to meditate, you say you're meditating for 1 month, you see, and your mind is going through tamas, rajas, and sattvas constantly as you're meditating. So if you happen to come upon the death of the ego, like the Roshi says in Zen, you'll sit on the zabuton and one day you'll die there. See, it means your ego will give up, and after you've sat for so long wondering about Buddha nature and so forth, all of a sudden you'll see yourself, or your non-self, the same way they would put it. You'd see beyond the non-self, and then Bushō, they call it in Japan, right? Bushō means same as Atman in Vedanta or Buddha nature. The Bushō, you'll have that experience. But if you have that experience when your mind is in tamas, in a tamasic cycle, a down cycle, not particularly spiritual and sort of dull and so forth, then it'll probably be a sort of fearsome thing to you, fearful. You'll shrink back from it. Say, oh, I don't want to jump off that cliff, you see. It's like going into the void. But you can have the same experience another month later or a few months later if you're persistent in your practice, and your mind happens to be in a sattvic state, then it'll just seem welcome. You'll fall into this deep meditation and you'll feel so healthy, as if you feel so healed and renewed and so forth, like going into deep sleep, that which doesn't transmigrate from heaven to earth to hell. Even if you talk about karma and reincarnation, you're talking about a movement that doesn't actually happen. It's something that's going on in your mind. Like if you ran a race in a dream, your body wouldn't go anywhere. In the same way, if you're dreaming various things in your mind, your soul isn't going anywhere. See, it's the one stationary thing upon which everything else is happening. It's the one immovable principle. That's why they describe it with so many different words, in Sanskrit and in English both, that it's the one stable principle. So you want to see that stable principle in yourself, then you yourself must become stable, not restless, and no torpor. You're going to have to be one-pointed, intense, without any conceptualization, as I just said. Be able to hold your mind in a non-dual state in order to see the non-dual reality. Be thee like thy Father in heaven is perfect, isn't it? So that's what the Father in heaven's like. It's not a bearded person on a cloud somewhere. It's this formless reality which you identify with, and when you do, the hailstone falls into the ocean and merges there. That swell of bliss called the Atman on the breast of the ocean of Brahman, into which my mind fell like a hailstone into an ocean and fully dissolved there, that makes a woman into a goddess and a man into a god. You transcend even the status of the divine beings and the celestials, and you become a realized soul. A Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means living liberated soul. just uses the mechanisms of nature and Maya to bring light to suffering souls and so forth. That's the Jivanmukta. In Buddhism, you'd say Bodhisattva, although there are 10 levels of Bodhisattva. In the same way, there's 4 knowers of Brahman in that, among the knowers of Brahman. But the other kind of souls, Videha-mukti, is a disembodied soul. Videha means he's gone beyond all bodies. Like Buddha said, whether the bodies are made of wood or stone or flesh and bone or thought, because you have thought bodies, I was just saying, you have dream bodies, you have other bodies that you inhabit. All those bodies, they all spring from the architecture of Maya. O architect of Maya, I've seen you, he said, Lord Buddha said. And that's why under the Bodhi tree, then he transcended that. Mara came. It was like Christ saying, get thee behind me. It wasn't a sentient evil. It was insentient. It was a making of his own mind. There was nothing sentient about evil. There's nothing substantial about negativity. It's like darkness. You walk into a dark room, and does it have any substance? Turn on a light, it's gone. It's like an appearance. It's an overlay. It's the same with sin and evil. It's non-existent. So why do you think Christ said, resist it not? Christians have been trying to unwrap that for centuries now. They're still obsessed with this. The evil is real. There's a devil, and things are out to get you, and there's them and us. But Christ said, resist not evil. It means it doesn't exist. You're giving it power by playing into it. Just simply bring in the light and be free. Meditate on that one reality, pass your time contentedly, and be free. So these teachings come out of these great scriptures, and welcome to what we call Jnana Yoga. There are 4 yogas, basically, that people practice, and they go with the 4 kinds of temperaments. And all 4 of those temperaments are in every one of us. So that's one yoga. It goes with the contemplative side of you. And then this is Jnana Yoga. You see, it goes with the studious side, but not just the studious intellectual side we're finding. Because people come here and say, do I have to learn the Sanskrit? Beep, 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 beep. <See? laughs> Not mentioning any names here. Do I have to use my mind? It's like saying, in a sense. But it's more that you have to learn to use your mind as a wedge and drive it between the real and the unreal. Separate the wheat from the chaff. Like the exercise we do with the kids. Put water and oil in a jar, cap it off, shake it, say, do they mix? You see? And the kids say, yes, they mix. Well, meditate for a minute, you see. And then as they watch right before them, oh, do they mix? I was wrong. That's like matter and spirit. People think that they mix, and they're acting as if they mix, and they're moving about and doing all their lives and forming karma around this admixture of matter and spirit. Even the New Agers are coming along and saying, all is one, all is one. See.
It's all good.
It's all good, yeah. But radical dude, I have a different message, you see. And it was proposed by the Indian seers at the very earliest time. Lord Kapila said, matter and spirit are 2 different things. And when you come to know that, then you'll be the seer, that will be the seen, and the relationship is all of a sudden righted. Because you do have a relationship with matter, with the worlds, but they come out of you. You don't come out of them. Now, what does science teach? What does theology teach? See, union of the sperm with the egg in the mother's womb. You come out of matter. Then your intelligence develops, if you're lucky. But it's all inherent in you, you see. There, you can't get something out of nothing. The creation theory is phony. The evolutionary theory is not complete. And the theology theory is even worse. If there's a contention between religion and science, Dalai Lama looks at both and says, I think I'll choose science. Science seems to be more rational. So same with Vedanta. The 7-day creation theory, unless you take it symbolically, if you take it literally, then you're in a mess. You create something out of nothing, that's the first problem. Second is that God is a creator at all. That's the second problem. It's the mind that's the creator, not God. We just described God, didn't we? The non-dual reality. It doesn't change. It doesn't go through transformations. It's not subject to Maya or cause and effect or time or space or causality. It's not in those things. Those things are in it. And how do you explain that? You explain it very simply, like Sri Ramakrishna did. The poison is in the snake, but the snake never dies. See? Maya is in Brahman, but it doesn't affect Brahman in the least. So that's why I say there's no aim in Maya. Be happy, be merry, be free here, by knowing that it's all unreal. Because you can follow neti, 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 you see, or shunyata, shunyata. You could arrive at emptiness. Oh, all of this is empty. There's no substance in it. That's depressing. In other words, nothing exists. But something always exists. You haven't gone to the fullness of the quotient yet. You haven't gone beyond emptiness. Emptiness was a step. Renunciation by stages were steps you took, and to get to this fullness, which is yourself. See? That's meeting yourself for the first time, at least in this lifetime. Introduce yourself to yourself and be exceedingly happy that thou art. Pragyanam Brahman, that consciousness is intelligence. Intelligence is consciousness of the highest type. Brahman is a mass of pure, indivisible conscious awareness, timeless and deathless. So I like those kinds of thoughts. Those are radical. It's beyond dude and dudess, man. Duke and duchess. Transcends gender. You're one indivisible reality, which you are.